I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, if it's a little echoey in here, it's because I'm sitting in my dining room, and I am just pondering over these shows that I've seen over the last month. You know, it's spooky season, blah, blah, blah. You know, I've been doing these, watching the series as I tend to do. I've been talking about the Soul City series, Soul City, New Orleans series, talking about Monsterland, talking about Lovecraft, and just watching other things. And I got to be honest with you, I'm still stuck. On Lovecraft. I'm not ready to let it go on how much I loved parts of it and loathed others. I'm not going to dwell on it much more, but it's hard for me to shake given everything that we're talking about right now. The date at which I'm recording this is early voting in Maryland. We're in early voting for everybody that's allowed to early vote. In the United States. And so, you know, next Tuesday will be the election day. And then what I know for a fact is that the winner won't be decisively crowned, because what we know is that the Trump administration is going to fight this thing tooth and nail legally, and we won't know. We're going to be in December still not knowing, probably, with 100% certainty. And you have Democrats talking about, you know, with the appointment of Barrett, we need to expand the court. And I'm listening to a podcast. I remember listening to a podcast like a couple of months ago, sometime in the summer, but they were talking about, what is the efficacy of the Supreme Court anyway, honey? What is the efficacy of, what's the point? Like, it's never been fair and impartial. It's always been the presumption of fairness and impartiality. But anyway, I'm not a legal expert. I think I'm overwhelmed. I think I'm frustrated. I think I just want it to be January 1. But that's not going to happen. I think I am over election periods, because what we know is that for all of the politicians that I know, and a lot of them are very nice people, very fine people, who mean well and do a lot locally, there's a certain amount of tap dancing that you do as a politician. It's the cold hard facts. And this is coming from someone, if I can't even remember if I mentioned it on the podcast, but I actually had a conversation with someone who is in the legislature here in Maryland. And I was basically asking them questions because I thought I wanted to run for a local office here. And after having the conversation with this person, who is a very serious person, did a lot of work, had a great, was a determined person, had a plan, followed the plan as it relates to what they wanted to do, where they wanted to help, gave me the real on exactly what it means to help on the local level, which is exactly why this person is helping on the state level rather than the local level, because as she explained it, as it relates to the United States politics, specifically Maryland. I'm a Marylander. I'm for real. No. Anyway, my husband was listening right now. He'd make fun of me. But anyway, I as it relates to Maryland politics, specifically Baltimore politics, it just made more sense to go a different route. Instead of the office that I was looking into. And after having that conversation, I was at that moment that I was like, girl, what are you doing? Like, what do you really want to do? Do you want to do other things to help? And the answer was, yes, I want to do other things to help, because I don't have the stomach for politics. I don't. I do everything possible in my personal life, in my sorority life, in my overall Greek life, to educate folks, to get them access to it. I can register people to vote. I can do all of those things, but what I don't have the stomach for is to be part of the machine. because I just don't have the stomach for the things that I would have to do, or not the things that I would have to do, the things that I would have to put up with, the concessions that I might have to make. And I'm not saying, again, I don't want to imply that people who are in politics are suckers, but what I'm saying is that I just don't think that I would have the energy to be okay with things not moving as quickly as I wanted them to, despite my best efforts. I don't think I would have the energy, like I have the energy in nonprofits work, to hang in there when the shoe drops and do it, try another thing. Not when it comes to politics. I don't know, maybe later, but not right now. And yeah, so I did, so when I do series like the Halloween series, when I do series like when I'm doing more than just talking about pop culture, when I'm talking about a certain subject over a period of time, it gives me an opportunity to kind of take myself out of my frustration with the political process, my frustration with whatever I'm dealing with in my nonprofit, and hone in on something that, in the case of like talking about movies and talking about, you know, my history and talking about my genealogy, it's kind of in the past, something that's kind of static. It's not something that's fluid per se, even though you get a little close to that when you're talking about film and TV, because, you know, film and TV in a lot of ways mirrors pop culture and our reality, right? And so I think I know the reason why I'm just so frustrated, immensely frustrated with Lovecraft Country, the more I think about it, and the more that time passes after the finale, the more I think, and then I read, my goodness, I read that the creator intentionally did not talk about colorism because she just didn't want it to be a part of the, just didn't want it to be a subject, and then went right out of her way. Never mind, I'm not going to rally. I'm not going to do that, but you get my... Let me finish my thought for those of you who are looking at Lovecraft Country and really love it, and maybe you're not Black American, or you are Black American and you love it. Listen, I'm not going to knock you. If you love that show, I love it for you. I did not enjoy it in the totality of it. Like I said in last episode, I enjoyed aspects of it. They were marvelously, wonderfully, painfully beautiful in parts. But in other parts, I was just puzzled to pieces, honey. But for those of you who maybe aren't on Black Twitter and you don't know what the trepidation is, it's some folks' trepidation is, it is that it's like it's one of those things that didn't really... I don't mind you being a little bit frenetic in terms of, or a little bit all over the place in terms of the subject matter that you want to deal with. Scary movies can do whatever the heck they want. Scary films, people in film and TV, you can do whatever you want and sharing your story. That's the beauty of entertainment. It's, you can try new things and people will love you for it. They might also hate you for it, but they'll love you for it. And the I'm sure there's a thrill in trying new things. And as I've mentioned before, and I will say until the cows come home or I no longer do the show, and even then I'll still say it, I enjoy sci-fi immensely. I enjoy talking about revisiting Black history, Black American history, and talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then if you can find a way to incorporate sci-fi with it, I love it even more, right? But I need you to be careful with the subject matter. And I guess my overall feeling about the show and the show's creators is they weren't as careful as they thought they were. They were a little bit reckless. And as I said, they were reckless with my emotions. And I'm speaking for me. I'm not speaking for all Black people, because, again, there are a lot of Black Americans who love this thing. There are a lot of non-Black and non-Americans who enjoy this thing, too. For its entertainment value, it's an entertaining show. But I was looking to it to be a little bit more than it was. And I think I was just disappointed because I put too much on the show. As sci-fi goes, it ticked off all the boxes. As if you take out the cultural references and you just go through the, you know, I don't even know what the plot is, to be honest with you, other than maybe I'm exaggerating. You know what the plot was. You know, I don't like the plot. That's what it was. I don't like the plot. I love the stories. I hated the plot. I wanted you to be more careful than what you were, and you weren't. But I was supposed to be going somewhere, and then I went somewhere else. My point for folks who are not Black American, who might want to have an understanding of why some folks aren't too pleased with the show, despite the fact that it's entertaining, is that there were some... You didn't talk about colorism when it was clearly something that needed to be talked about. When you talked about Tulsa, you talked about racism, and you talked about why it exists, but you didn't talk about the bastard children of racism, which is colorism, and which is classism, and which is, even though classism in itself isn't a racist, it's not a racist thing, it's certainly upheld in Black culture as a byproduct of racism in a lot of ways. And so is colorism, you know? And if you are, never mind, I'm not. Anyway, look up colorism, because it's not just a Black American, and it's not an American invention. Colorism exists, and I've talked about this. I think I had a whole episode. Yeah, I did. It's called Colors. And again, I'm not an expert in much, if anything, right? I'm talking about from my own experience, from my own conversations with folks who come from different diasporas, and just my, that's what I'm speaking from. I can't speak from anything else. I'm not a scholar in race relations. I'm not a scholar I'm not a scholar in anything. I just like to read. But anyway, and so from my perspective, I'm like, okay, well, you talk about racism and you're turning this thing on its head, right? You're talking about some folks' just blatant indifference and their superiority to you. Just blatantly say, well, baby, we're superior to you, and we're superior to, because certainly in Lovecraft, in the show, in Lovecraft Country, they, you know, went out of their way to say in the very beginning, Christina, the character of Christina, say, oh, we don't associate with them. They're lower than us, talking about KKK members and poor white people. And so they set themselves up, that family, the Braithwaite family, to be superior to everyone, poor white people, and of course, Black people, right? And it's not a question of we're racist. It's just a question of we're better than you, and you're not on our level. You're not on our caliber. But nevertheless, at the end of the show, Christina's show did need the magical Negro's blood to be able to do what he needed to do. there's a funny line that I heard. I'm not going to share it on this show because I'm not going to do it. But I guess the point is there's the reasons why I'm frustrated are pretty big. And I said that in the last episode, so I'm going to leave it alone. But it's hard for me to let it go, because you would drop this show and intentionally leave out things like talking about colorism, looking at it on its head, talking about it. My issue isn't with Journey Smollett. My issue is that the woman who played Ruby could have easily played Journey. My issue is that we could have learned more from Hippolyta. We could have experienced more from Hippolyta. Literally, you had Hippolyta come back, and she essentially had abandoned her child. Not on purpose, but she had abandoned her child. Her child is definitely still traumatized by the fact that not only did she lose her mother, or not only did she lose her father, she lost her best friend in that Emmett Till. You know, if you didn't get it, you get it now. Emmett Till was her bestie. She lost her bestie in a very brutal way, and then her mama wasn't there when she was grieving the loss of her bestie. Right. And then she gets cursed, and then she loses her freaking arm, or at the very least, she passes out as her arm is she's been caught by these apparitions. And she awakens to a shriveled arm. And then here's my mama with some blue hair now. And so I didn't get enough from that. I didn't get enough from her. And then at the end, you go, anyway, I just, this is a terrible end in my opinion. But whatever. And so, you know what this whole thing got me to doing? And I thank God for it, because at the very least, you know, the show and my frustration for it got me to actually start reading Lovecraft Country, the book. And what you may not know, but you should know now, is that the show deviated quite a bit from the book. It even talks about it directly. In the show itself, it talks about it. I forgot what episode that was. Was it 8? 9. Can't call it. Maybe it was episode 9 that Tick, when he comes back, he goes to Montrose and shows him the book that apparently his son had written in the future about them. And there are some details that are different in him saying that there's some details are different, but no, this is our family story. They were nodding to the fact that, yeah, we deviate quite a bit from the book, but like there are whole storylines that are completely different in this show than from the book. But nevertheless, this is the same story. And so I began to read that story, and baby, whoo, let me just tell you. First off, I forget how much ground you can cover in a book in a few pages than you can cover in a show. I keep forgetting that. And I appreciate why the show deviated from the book. I don't agree with it, but I appreciate why they thought that it was necessary for them to do that, or to do that. And so I'm reading the book and I'm enjoying it. And this is kind of saving me. This is kind of pulling me out of that loop, because again, if it's not watching shows, it's reading books that helps me kind of pull out of that funk of what reality is bringing and allows me to put some perspective on some things, right? So regardless of the outcome of this election thing, and certainly we'll know a little bit more by the time of my next episode, you know, hopefully I'll be in a better place. But I hope we're all just, I just want us all to take a collective deep breath and just try to get through it, because baby, it's not going to be pretty regardless, because there's going to be some foolishness afoot. Talking about those who are in the United States, those of you who are outside of the United States, just hang on to, because the reverberations of whatever foolishness is going on here will somehow impact you, especially for those of you who are listening from the UK, honey, because y'all are going through foolishness yourself. It's just a little bit different. Anyway, so, but I want to, you know, Halloween is a few days away. By the time you're listening to this thing, it's just a few days away. And I did not get a chance to participate in my friend's Halloween-a-thon that they do every month, or every October. But like I said, through the series, I kind of did my own thing. And let me tell you, I tried to watch a bunch of scary stuff outside of what I talked about here. And it was a whole bunch of false starts. It was a whole bunch of false starts, because I'm a punk at the end of the day. I'm a scaredy cat. Y'all know this. I'm not afraid to admit it. But one thing that I did start and stop, and now I'm back on it again, is Blythe Manor. What is it? The Haunting of Blythe Manor. Baby, when I tell you that thing is like watching molasses dry, or like sap from a tree drip. Initially, it's slow, baby. It's so slow. But it's like it's slow, but with an injection of fast. It's like you walking real slow for a while, and then for like 2 seconds you run, you sprint, and then you walk real slow for maybe another 5 minutes, and then you sprint again real quick for like a couple of seconds, and then you walk real slow. It's like doing that sort of thing. And so I'm gonna be honest with you, 100% honest with you, I fell asleep so many times on the first episode that I had to restart it at least 3 times, because I kept falling asleep because it was doing that sprinting thing, that slow walk to a sprint. And I didn't realize it was doing that because I kept falling asleep. But then on the third watch, okay, I noticed that it was doing the whole slow walk sprint. And so now I'm back on it because I got my cat eyes on and I'm watching this time for real. I'm watching for the Easter eggs and stuff. So I'm back on it, and hopefully I'm going to talk about the Haunting of Blythe Manor. And I'm going to start injecting some more of the family stuff, too, because I love November is is family month for me, as far as I'm concerned. But I'll keep it cool. I'll keep it interesting. But yeah, I'm back on. I think I shared this, but I'm back on my genealogy hunt on my mama's side of the family. Lord, it's been up and down, up and down. And I have a full time job, and then I do this, and then I, you know, do Greek life and sorority life and all of that stuff. And I don't have the energy sometimes. I don't have the nerve to have a husband and all of that stuff and friends. And so trying to find the time to do that research, devote that time to that research, is difficult, but not impossible. So I'm doing it, and I've got some things that I want to share and talk about, hopefully to get you or encourage somebody that you know to start doing some research of your own, because the stuff is beautiful. It's beautiful to know what your people have done. Even if it's some dastardly stuff, you know what I mean? It's still beautiful to understand how everybody else responded, how everyone else kind of managed in terrible situations and wonderful situations. You got to look at your past in order to understand where you are today, how y'all got here today, how we got here today. And then you got to start thinking about the legacy that you're going to leave behind. And I think about legacy a lot. The legacy that I want to leave for my hubby and I's future kid, or kids, plural. Definitely for my niece and my nephews. The legacy that I want to leave behind for the organizations that I'm a part of. I think of legacy a lot. I think we need to be more cognizant of that. I think we need to be more intentional about what we're trying to leave behind. Because it might not mean anything to you. You're not going to be here. But like for the people that come behind you, yeah, it's important that you know. Anyway, so I'll talk about that. But speaking of legacies, this last episode, you like that transition? No? Okay. I didn't do a really great job. But anyway, this last episode of Soul City New Orleans is The Give Man. The episode's called Give Man. And I loved it. I didn't love how it was all tied together. I thought that there's a lot to be left to be desired in this series, but the thing that I love about New Orleans is the thing that's left here. At least the folklore. That's actually not folklore if it's a part of a religion. But anyway, and I'm giving away too much already, but in the next segment, I'll talk all about the episode. But I guess when it comes to, what was it, Crossroads? I talked about it, I think it was like a year ago, 2 years ago. I was talking about 80s films. And one of the 80s films that I watched and I talked about is Crossroads. I love that film. Not for the cultural appropriation. Not because, you know, of course they use the black person as a vehicle to further your cause. What's that? I keep forgetting the guy's name, but you know, when white people in the 80s, especially in Hollywood movies, were, you know, if they had dark hair, they were supposed to be swarthy, a little swarthy looking, and they were supposed to be gypsies or whatever. Remember where everybody in the 80s, at least it was presumed that everybody in the 80s films were being like gypsies or whatever, and whatever their interpretation of what a gypsy was. Anyway, but regardless of that, I loved it because it was, again, talking about hoodoo in film. And specifically about an aspect of hoodoo. Voodoo too, but hoodoo. And it's the same reason why I like this episode, without, because it doesn't have the cultural appropriation. It's just real specific. And the thing about it is, the concept, what this episode is talking about, is not new. It's not fresh. It is certainly something that is not specific to hoodoo, the hoodoo religion. It is in every religion, most religions, in some sort of way. It's definitely been a story or a folklore story that's been told in European countries, certainly one that's been adapted in or told in certain ways in African countries. And then, like I said, it's a part of hoodoo culture and voodoo culture too. But nevertheless, the way that this thing was crafted, again, the show is 15 minutes. It's like 15 minutes, right? But the way that this episode was crafted was beautiful to me. It was interesting to me. And it tied all three episodes of the Soul City New Orleans series about as well as you could tie it up. I loved it. Now, there's an aspect of this that I want more of. And if I'm being 100%, I'll just go ahead and tell you. The cab driver, I wanted so much more for him. I want more of him. I want to hear more from him, but I think the series is done. So it is what it is. But I will, in the next segment, I will talk about the episode itself. I will talk about some of the themes that were in it, some of the characters that are recognized in real life that are talked about in it. And yeah, so just stay tuned. As per usual, I will talk in a complete circle, but it's okay. Just stick around. I'll get to the end. One thing though, I did, as I think I had mentioned, I record these things out of series because it depends on how I'm feeling and what I want to accomplish in the series and how I want to place things. So I say something at the end where I say I'm going to have more of these scary stories. And it's sort of kind of true because I'm going to talk about Blythe Manor next episode. But no, that this series is, for all intents and purposes, the Halloween spooky season series is pretty well done for the most part. It's pretty well done for the most part. It depends on how I feel, but I'm definitely not going to keep up with this particular series. Like, I am doing Blythe Manor next episode, but that doesn't mean that the very next episode that I won't do something like completely different, right? So anyway, just wanted to share that. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for liking. Thank you for those of you who subscribed or whatever. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me turned on as white noise in the background while you're finishing whatever task that you're doing. I really appreciate you for that, because you could literally have any other podcast for that, but you chose mine and I appreciate it. And so if you are so inclined at the end of this episode or even during it, if you want to leave me a positive rating, 4 or 5 stars, and if you want to leave a comment, I will happily read it online, because that's how much that means to me. And I appreciate it. But if you trifling, if you tacky with it, of course I'm not going to read it. But if you're not tacky and you're just sharing how the show has gotten you through a boring task, I'd love to hear that. Appreciate you. And stick around for the next segment. Okay, y'all. So in this last installment of Soul City New Orleans, we have the episode Give Man. And so what I will say is that this mini series, because that's exactly what it is, it's a mini series at this point, it started off in an interesting way, using a concept about spirituality. And I've already said earlier this month in one of the earlier episodes, I actually think it was the Soul City episode, New Orleans episode, the Grace one, the very first episode, where I said, you know, spiritual based horror is something that really gets to me, because I'm a spiritual person. And in all religions, there is an element of understanding that there is this world that you are in the moment, that you see every day. You wake up, you go to bed, you move around, you experience things. So there is this world, and then there is another world. And depending on your spiritual tradition, there are a few others. And you experience them in different ways. Sometimes the way that you practice that spiritual tradition can determine how you move through the world and how you interpret how different things are happening in the world and how you explain unexplainable phenomena. And so there are many, actually don't think there are any traditions. Although I confess again, I always do that. When I'm introducing a topic you've never heard from me before, I always say again, because I'm always thinking about it. I am always renewing my mind on what I think about, and I'm always trying to check in to make sure that I'm kind of grounding myself, because who wants to be a know-it-all? Nobody. And also, it's just, you know, you don't know everything, so make sure that you are speaking for yourself, for your experience, and being open to learning more. Little fun tip for the day. Anyway, but no, so I confess that I don't know. I'm not a trained religious scholar. I just enjoy learning about religion because it's a huge part of my life. Religious practice is a huge part of my life. And I enjoy learning about different religious practices. Even if the person doesn't believe the way I believe, I still enjoy understanding the things that connect us. Spiritual folks, I enjoy learning that. I recognize, you know, sometimes I feel like people get so caught up in trying to dog another religious practice
that you're so narrow-minded that you're not even thinking about spirituality itself and what it is. And I think spirituality is not rooted in hate at all. I think the way that we use it, even in that spiritual practice, there are ways where you can use it as a protection. And I actually think it's in every religious tradition that you can use it as protection from someone or something. And I think we are so narrow-minded, even folks who bash Christianity, especially evangelical Christianity, because they deserve it for the hatred that they put out in the world. And anybody who's Orthodox anything deserve the ire that they invite because of the way that the zeal that drives them to practice in very specific ways that are alienating to a lot of people. Because at the end of the day, spirituality is very much a singular sort of affair. Like, you can commiserate with other people. This is supposed to be about horror. Anyway, I will use that spiritual conversation for another day, because you probably did not come here for all of that. Anyway, I just think about it a lot. Anyway, my point is, for me, because I take my spirituality so personally and I have such an active imagination, baby, I have to be careful what I put into my spirit. I have to be careful. And you should too, but like, you do you. I'm just talking about me right now. I have to be careful, because when I tell you, y'all, guess what? So by the time you're listening to this, obviously at this point, you know, I've kind of done things all out of order. Not only do I tend to take breaks in between recording a single episode for y'all, but I also, if I got like a good thing going, what I do is something like a series. So this like Soul City series, I've recorded this. I'm all over the place, but I've pre-recorded a lot of these, right? So even this one, by the time you're hearing it, is not anywhere near the time frame where I actually recorded it. But, where was I going with that? Shoot. See, this is what happens when you don't have a co-host. I forgot where I was going. I guess my overall point was, I spent a lot of time prepping for these episodes. It might not always sound like it, because sometimes I'm literally recording a thing and scrapping the whole thing because I just wasn't feeling it. Anyway, but especially when it comes, so I'm always intentional, but I'm more intentional when it comes to talking about the spiritual horror, because I gotta be careful about what I'm doing, what I'm inviting into my spirit. And so, yeah. And again, y'all might laugh at me, and it's kind of funny if you think about it, because I'm like, ooh, girl, sometimes I just need somebody to just rub little baby circles on my back, because sometimes it bees like that. But anyway, but I do need to be careful about the things that I'm consuming and the joy, to protecting my joy. You know how everybody say protect your joy. So anyway, but I've been preparing for these, and I've been watching these movies, and I got to be honest with you, this Soul City series, the Soul City New Orleans series, is right up my alley, because it's scary to me because of the concepts, right? It's scary to me, but it's not frightening to most people. But it's scary to me, but it's the type of scary that I can handle, because it's talking about spirituality and it's talking about voodoo and hoodoo, which is something that really interests me the most out of all of the religions that I pay attention to, and the religious practices that I, or spiritual practices that I pay attention to and have learned about over the years. Obviously, I have a connection to hoodoo and voodoo because of my familial roots in the spiritual practice. It's in my family, and I grew up with it all around me, but I never understood what was happening. It was kind of just something that I knew was a part of our life, but I didn't really get what we were doing, why you didn't sweep a broom over your feet, nobody's feet, why, you know, you really shouldn't split the pole, and more things that I won't even get into. And I talked about this over the years. I talked about it when I talked about the Out of Africa, or the Scary Stories, my Black American Folklore, Scary Stories My Daddy Told Me series. And I actually kind of touch on it all the time when I'm going through these episodes. So, or when I'm doing these episodes, because I think about it a lot. Anyway, so I really love this series because it began and ended, in my opinion, with concepts that are, what is the word that I want to use? Concepts that are explored, not explored, but you can explore when you are learning about voodoo, when you are learning about hoodoo. And those traditions mixed with Christianity and the ways in which they're similar or the ways in which they borrow from each other and all of that stuff. So, because, you know, voodoo and hoodoo it's like a gumbo of ways of spiritual practices and beliefs that are based in African religious spiritual traditions, as well as Eastern European Christian traditions that were introduced to Black Americans in slavery. I forgot the word when you, is it antebellum? Is it during slavery? I forgot. But you know what I mean, during slavery and beyond. Well, yeah, during slavery. And so anyway, I'm fascinated by that because again, I see it even today in church. People don't even understand sometimes what they're doing. Anyway, I just enjoy seeing it. And so I enjoy this series. I have rambled enough. Let me get to it. So in this final episode, the cab driver who was present, dropping off Althea at her grandmother Grace's house in the first episode, who took the guy whose name I've forgotten in, Pillow Shop to the Pillow Shop, when he was trying to get some sleep, right? That same cab driver is present and a very big part of this last and this final episode. So let me run down the episode. It begins with a voodoo ceremony and chicken bones. And I'll just tell you, chicken bones with powder. I believe it's fine white flour. That's a relic. Y'all know what a relic is. If you don't know what a relic is, it's something that is mentioned in Catholicism. Relics are mentioned, obviously, in voodoo and hoodoo. Relics are also mentioned in, I believe, relics are mentioned or at least referenced in, not Buddhism, Hindu, in Hindu religion. And I think there are other world religions that reference, not world, but other spiritual traditions that reference relics. But these chicken bones are, these powdered chicken bones are splayed on the ground. You have this old elder man, which, by the way, if you go to, What did I tell y'all at the very beginning? Hold on, because see, now I'm forgetting where you can find this show, because you can't. It's not just Topic. It's Topic. Soul City can only be watched, can only be found on Topic, where you have to get a subscription. Topic is a subscription service through Amazon Prime or Prime Video. So you even you can't just go to Amazon Prime or Prime Video. You have to at least start your trial to watch these three episodes. And I shared that in the very first one, the very first episode that I covered. But you got to go in here and you got to dig. And again, they're short, they're to the point. But anyway, in this final episode, which is the conclusion of the series, you've got this, it opens with this. What I was saying is the man in the picture, when you go to Topic and you try to find Soul City, New Orleans, the man in the picture who's got white eyes and his mouth is open with a beard is in this opening scene. That's what you need to know. That image, I'm so sorry I took you on a wild goose chase just now, but I explained all about where you could find this show because it's important for you to see this picture here, because it gives you the sense that this man is supremely important. What you don't know is that he's not, what you find out really quickly is that he is a vessel, or at the very least, he is a priest, a high priest, but you don't quite know what's going on, right? You don't quite know where he fits into everything other than he's performing the ceremony in front of this man who's clearly here because he wants to be. So anyway, so you have this man who, remember, I told you this guy is, if you ever watched The Wire or The Walking Dead, I forgot this dude was in The Walking Dead. I totally forgot. But this guy is the black guy with the beard. He don't never shave his beard because he don't have to. And even when he's in the wilderness and it's in a zombie apocalypse, his beard's still going to be everything it needs to be. It's still going to be moisturized. Okay. It's still going to be juicy looking. Okay. And it's still going to be well coiffed. Now, what they're going to do is try to separate it a little bit, make him look a little unkempt. But what you're not going to do, what you're not going to do is leave that man's beard musty and dusty, because that's not going to happen. I've never seen that actor's beard be anything but luxurious and black too. I don't know if he does Beijing, but anyway, so this actor, and I even don't even remember the names of these characters, and it's not even hardly important. What is more important is this story that is being told, which is in this scene, this man is on his knees and he's got this determined look in his face, and the priest is chanting an incantation, and I described to you the white chicken bones. They've been splayed in front of the man because, again, they are relics. They are used in this. They're being used in this ceremony, and there are women behind him who are priestesses themselves, and they are dressed. Everybody there is dressed in white, and again, white is a very important color in a lot of spiritual traditions, including voodoo. And so the women are in white and they have turbans on their head. The high priest, who's clear to be the person proceeding over this ceremony, is in white himself, all white himself. White is a symbol of purification, right? So you're doing a thing. It's a symbolism of purification. And everybody knows that, right? I know you know that. Everybody knows that. And so anyway, Oh, of course it's trash day. I'm doing this on trash day, of course. And so let me move. Or you know what? It's trash day. Things happen. Y'all hear this. It's totally fine. They're probably gonna holler too. You might hear them hollering and it's okay. We just gonna keep it moving. So in this moment, the high priest is basically, you know, it's clear that as he's chanting and as the high priestesses are chanting, or maybe they're not high priestesses, but they're priestesses, are chanting behind them, and they're, you know, doing what they need to do to conjure up what they need to conjure. It's clear they're conjuring up something. And what you need to understand is that this is taking place in something like an alley, right? Or not, something like an alley, or at least a entryway to like a long corridor, an outdoor corridor that leads you somewhere else. But in this meantime, it's private enough for you to have enough space to be out here on the street, or at least be out here in this space, to be able to do what you need to do. And so there are brick walls on either side of them, to the left and to the right. There's a long brick wall because, again, they're in a corridor. And so to the left of them, and I believe, I don't know that there's a significance to where this thing is showing up, where what I'm about to tell you is showing up, but to the left of the ceremony and on the wall, there appears a shadow that appears to be wearing a top hat, that appears to be kind of skeletal, but at the very least, it's very lean, with long, lean fingers and flange arms. And it begins to talk, and then you realize that the words that are coming out aren't from the high priest. The words and the voice that's being broadcast is from somewhere else. And then you begin to talk. You begin to hear the speaker ask if the man who's on his knees with a determined look on his face is sure about what he's doing. And the man, determined with the beautiful beard, says, "Oh yeah, I'm sure." And then the speaker, this entity that's speaking, says, "All right, sins of the father will be visited upon the son." And the man with a determined face is like, "All right." Like, he doesn't say all right, but in his mannerisms, it's clear that he's totally fine with this. Whatever deal he's made, because we come to this scene in the middle of the incantation, right? So we don't know what he's asked for. It's just the response is from this entity that is now broadcast on the brick, "Are you sure?" Again, to which the man says an emphatic, "Yup. Oh, baby, I'm sure," right? And then he says, "The sins of the father are visited upon the son." And again, just to pause, y'all know, even if you're not a religious person, even if you're an atheist, you've heard this phrase before. It is a Christian phrase, right? It comes from the Bible. And it actually comes from the Old Testament, but I won't get into that. But the point is, this phrase is not unique. It's not new. And the concept is not new either. Or it's not unique to Christianity. And, you know, the idea is the things that you set up. Now, mind you, in Christianity and spiritual practices, it's a literal understanding of that. It's like it's meant to be literal. But in everyday use, the way we use it is the things that you set up for, the loose ends that you don't tie up in your own life will have to be dealt with by your offspring. And so that is trauma, that is financial burdens, that is unresolved relationships and feuds and things. That's real, and we've seen examples of this in history, right? Family feuds, right? Someone passing away and leaving massive debt. We have kids who've been in college who, well, no, that's not an example of that, but you get what I mean. Like, there are everyday examples of quote unquote a sin or something that's unresolved. In the more secular instance, something that's been unresolved that is now has to be resolved by the offspring or the child. And so anyway, but in this instance, as in most religious, in most instances in religion where this phrase is repeated, this is meant to be literal. So in this instance, whatever you're passing, whatever demise that you are asking this entity to help you dodge, oh baby, somebody got to pay the price, and the piper is coming for your child. Anyway, so let me just stop here for a second. I know I have rambled, and this is going to be a long one because I have a lot to say about this. And I'm hoping that I can just kind of go through the rest because I'm already looking at the time and here we are. Anyway, this entity I recognized immediately, this entity that is cast on the wall during this incantation. This entity I recognize 100% to be Papa Legbo. Google Papa Legbo. Papa Legbo is a figure in voodoo. Papa Legbo is not necessarily, how can I describe Papa Legbo? Papa Legbo, for lack of a better phrase, is not necessarily a trickster and is not necessarily the devil either. Papa Legbo in voodoo is something like a person that can make an entity that can make something happen for you, but you need to be careful what you're asking this person, this entity for, right? You need to be careful what you're asking for. You need to be very clear with this entity when you conjure this entity, because certainly that's what they were doing. They were conjuring Papa Legbo. They did not say Papa Legbo's name, but that entity to me very much resembled that whole incantation and the way that this entity broadcast itself onto the wall, in my opinion, reminded me of Papa Legbo. Google Papa Legbo. You've heard about him. You've heard about that. You've heard that name, maybe not in the way that I'm saying it, but you've heard this name before, because if you watched American Horror Story Coven, you saw him. If you've watched, American Gods. If you watched American Gods, you saw him. Although I did not love that version of him. The man who played him is beautiful. I did not. That man is beautiful. The man that played him in American Horror Story Coven, he's good looking. He's very handsome. But the man who played him in American Gods, though, that actor, oof, that chocolate skin with those chocolate eyes, it's like that different chocolate eye. I was like, oof, But everybody knows him. It's the same guy that played, the Jamaican bad guy in, that one Netflix series that's canceled. This is not helping y'all. Anyway, but you've seen the character Papa Legbo in recent media references in those two shows that I just mentioned, American Horror Story Coven and American Gods. And so I believe American God was a season two. No. American Gods season one. You saw him in some of the later episodes. And so anyway, so you've been introduced to Papa Legbo, and there are probably other instances where you've been introduced to that figure, but I can't think of any others right now. But anyway, so this character, this person, this entity is Papa Legbo, who's talking to the man with the beautiful beard on his knees, who has given a request of Papa Legbo to come through. And Papa Legbo was like, okay, are you sure? He's like, yup. Sons of the Father are going to be visited on the Son. Cool. Okay. So the guy, that's over, right? Okay. That's done. The immediate next scene, you see, I think it's 10 years later. The next scene, you see the man with the beautiful beard in a luxurious house. It's clear he got loot. It's clear he's got resources. Right? It's more than money. He's got juice, right? He's got resources. He's got things. He's acquired things. And so, you know, we see his wealth. Then we see him going to a jazz club. And I kept trying to get the name of this jazz club, but I can't quite get it. I can't quite remember it. But anyway, so he's in this jazz club and he meets this bar owner. And he gives this bar owner, let me back up. So he goes into this jazz bar and he sees this musician. We see this musician seated at the piano and he's playing, and then he has a band backing him up. I instantly saw this man at the piano and I was like, I know this face. I know this face. I know this person, the way he's dressed. I know this person. Can't quite put my finger on it. Come to find out, it's PJ Morton. PJ Morton is the pianist who's a subject in this episode. So anyway, the beautiful beard man comes in and he's, again, we've already seen that he's rich and he's got access to resources. He's wealthy and he has access to resources. So he goes up to the musician and he puts a couple bills into his little tip jar. When I'm talking about bills, I'm trying to get it right, because, you know, I'm trying to get my lingo together. But anyway, I think it was a hundred that he put, at least two hundreds that he put in his tip jar. And the guy who is PJ Morton, who's, you know, he gives him a head nod, you know, he's like, thank you. And then he keeps on playing, and he's playing well, right? He does this little thing for a moment after beautiful beard man, leaves the tip and then turns away. He does this little thing where he's kind of stretching his hand out. You ever seen somebody with arthritis, or who's had issues with like their wrist and their hands, like their hands are giving them trouble. And honestly, the only thing I can think of is the only people that I've ever known that have, you know, ever exercised, like outstretched their hands in a way that's stretching them to, because their wrist hurts or their hand hurts, their palm or whatever, usually are people who have arthritis or who have suffered some sort of injury to that hand, right? So it's clear that this, that PJ Morton's character is he's got hand issues. He's got an issue with his wrists. He's got an issue with his fingers, which is very bad if you're a pianist, right? You need your hands. You need your fingers to be in good shape. But anyway, he continues to play and he continues to play beautifully. But what we need to catch is that he instantly, it's almost like Beautiful Beard Man puts the money in the jar. And then as soon as when he puts the money in the jar, PJ's character like starts stretching his hand out a little bit, like he instantly has some issues. And it's like, okay, well, you know, hope you're getting better. So Beautiful Beard Man comes back to the bar and greets the bar owner. And he gives the bar owner a manila envelope that clearly has loot in it, right? And a lot of it. And the bar owner's like, thank you, appreciate it. And then, you know, they have a little exchange. And then in that moment, you know, Beautiful Beard Man orders a drink. And bar owner is like, you know, I appreciate this money. You know, it's, you know. And, you know, basically the way he talks about it, he's like, I cannot remember what happened. Oh, he says, you know, thanks for this money. Kid's working out. But when you gonna tell him? And you get this instance. And again, he's talking to the bar owner is talking to Beautiful Beard Man. And you get this sense that instantly, or at least I did, that Beautiful Beard Man has just paid the bar owner to make sure that this spectacular pianist continues to play in the club. And then it hits you like he's the reason. Beautiful Beard Man is the reason why this guy's in the club, right? And as soon as when you get that realization, Beautiful Beard Man is like, he don't need to know. Oh, here's the other thing. The bar owner says, you keep giving me this money and you keep giving him the big old tips. And he's like, that's cool and everything, but like, shouldn't he know? He should know why he's here. He should know what's all going on. And Beautiful Beard Man is like, he don't need to know. He just need to keep playing. And so we kind of leave it at that. That weird exchange, we kind of leave it there. And so, yeah, so in the end of that scene, you see Beautiful Beard Man smiling. You hear PJ Morton's character playing beautifully some tune. And he makes this statement. Anybody here from Australia or been to Australia? And then you get one person that's like, woo, or whatever. And he's like, I made this song while I was there. It's a beautiful place. I made this song while I was there. And then he goes into playing this very fast jazz song that it's clear like this man is talented because it's PJ Morton. But anyway, this man is talented. And so the scene cuts and it goes 10 years later. And we're back in the bar. The Beautiful Beard Band is still beautiful, still wealthy, still connected, still in the bar, giving old dude, bar owner money, giving PJ Morton's character hundreds of dollars in his tip jar. But there are fewer people in the club. What I didn't mention before was that the club was packed when we first meet PJ Morton's character, right? And the bar owner. We flash forward 10 years and the bar ain't hitting it no more. You know what I mean? It's dead, basically. But Beautiful Beard Man still comes in, still gives $200 or whatever in PJ's cup and gives the bar owner a healthy tip. And, in the envelope, the manila envelope, he still gives him a bunch of money. And, you know, the bar owner's like, this is cool or whatever, but like, he running people out. You know what I mean? He running people out. What did he say? He said he's running more people out than he's bringing them in, right? Basically because his playing has decreased, right? So remember I told you he looked like he was having some hand issues the first time we meet PJ Morton's character. Well, those 10 years later, those hand issues have they've increased to the point where now it's clear that he's having trouble doing the fingerings on the piano that he would normally do, right? And so he still has that same tired line. Anybody been to Australia? I made the song when I was in Australia, and then he plays it. He's not even able to hit the licks like he was used to, right? Like even when he did when we first met him, right? He's terrible at this point because he just doesn't have it anymore. His hands are not performing the way they need to perform because he's just got those issues. And what's more, it's clear that he's like self-medicating a little bit. So, or at least it's implied that he's self-medicating. So what we don't know though is, let me back up because I think I put the cart before the horse. So the beautiful beard man has this dream where he's being told time's almost up. And so the voice that's saying time's almost up is the same voice that we heard in the very beginning. It's Papa Legbo's voice. And the man is in his bed and he wakes up. He was having a dream. He was having a dream that Papa Legbo was talking to him in his house. But he knows it's not a dream. He knows this is real. Time is running out. And so it's from there that he goes to the jazz club again to see it half empty, more than half empty. And PJ Morton's character struggling to play when he has the conversation with the owner that says, he's running more people out than in, and you know, what's up? Like this money is cool and everything, but like, he's sorry, right? His plan is not up to par. And then, beautiful beard man is, you know, he's remembering his dream. He's just like, I just need a little bit more time. It's all right. So he leaves the club and he gets into this cab and he has this very heartfelt conversation with this cabbie. What you need to know is, again, it's the same cabbie that we've seen from episode 1, 2, and now 3, right? Same cabbie. And so he gives the cabbie like $100, $200 and says, drive until this runs out, right? So you get the sense that he's just driving. Got a lot on his mind. The cabbie is like, he tells beautiful beard man the same thing that he told the guy in the second episode, the pillow shop episode. If you want to lay your head back and sleep, you can. And then so he tells beautiful beard man that. And then beautiful beard man says, man, I ain't slept in six days. And then cabbie is like, well, what's on your mind? And then he just kind of spills his heart out that he's like, I made a bad deal. And now we come to it. We really understand, if you didn't get it before, you get it now, that not only did beautiful beard man make sure that PJ Morton's character is able to play in that club even 10 years later when he's not even up to par anymore, but that the reason why he's doing it, it's because it's his son. And we get the sense that PJ Morton's character doesn't know that Beautiful Beard Man is his father. What is more, then you start putting the pieces together and you realize that Beautiful Beard Man struck a deal with Papa Legbo and was totally fine with dodging whatever sins that he was dodging and putting them on his son. And so you understand that PJ Morton's character is now his son. So PJ Morton's character is hurting now, he's in poor condition directly because of the deal that Beautiful Beard Man, which is his father, made, right? And so this is why Beautiful Beard Man is spending all this money, because he's guilty. It's guilt money. Basically, it's penance for selling his son out to Papa Legbo to reap whatever terrible bad things he was trying to miss, which in this instance manifested itself in his body deteriorating. The very thing that brings him joy and that brings him money is his hands, and his health is deteriorating, you know. And so he's losing everything, right? And that's a high price. And the father is messed up behind it, right? So he's spilling his guts out and to Cabby, and he's crying. And Cabby, you know, Cabby's consoling him the best way that he knows how. And he drops him off. Dude, drop him off back home. He drops him off back home for Beautiful Beard Man to kind of sleep it off. So Beautiful Beard Man goes back to his luxurious house and sleeps it off, basically. But in his dream, he don't sleep too softly and soundly, because he has another dream in which he opens the door and there's a casket outside of his, not a casket, but a coffin. A coffin outside of his, on his front porch. And there is a difference, by the way, there is a difference between a casket and a coffin. Google it, look it up. Coffins are creepier, is the best way I can describe it. They're just different. Anyway, but there's a coffin outside on his porch, and he opens the door, and he's summoned because somebody is ringing the doorbell, right? So he's summoned to the door. He goes to the door, and he sees this coffin, and he's just like, "What the what?" The coffin slowly begins to open, and he hears the voice again, and he's like, "Time's running out." And he sees himself laying in the coffin, right? Beautiful beard and all, looking gorgeous, because he's gorgeous. But anyway, beautiful beard and all, but he's laying in the casket. Okay. So he wakes up, obviously, it's a nightmare, and he's still messed up. He wakes up and then he does a line of coke, right? Because that he's just self-medicating too, because he's destroyed. And so anyway, so he rummages through his pockets, and he finds a card, because when the cabbie gave him a card, I guess. And so he was rummaging through his pockets to find that card. So he finds the card and calls Cabby to come pick him up. Cabby comes, picks him up, and, you know, he takes him to the jazz club where his son's going to be. He goes there, and his son is still making that lame, corny statement. Anybody ever been to Australia? I think it's not 20 years later, but it's definitely time has passed. Time has passed, but not years. Anyway, so still in that club, still playing poorly, still nobody really listening to him. And the club owner is like, "Man, you got to give it up." And no, he doesn't say that. The Beautiful Beard Man gives him an envelope that appears to be overfilled. And the bar owner is like, "This is more than usual." And he's like, "Because it's the last time. This is the last one. Let him off easy." Because he's like, "I'm not doing this no more." So you get the sense that the father knows, Beautiful Beard Man knows that time is running out. So he's just going to give up the ghost on this. And so, you know, PJ Morton's character, the son, finishes his set. Beautiful Beard Man goes to the restroom, and club owner, PJ Morton's character, the son, sits at the bar and he's like, "I'm sorry, I just got comfortable on the bed. I you probably heard that." The PJ Morton's character sits at the bar and he's like done with his set, and he starts complaining about the crowd, how it's dead, to the bar owner. And the bar owner's like, "Yeah, it's like that every night." And he's like, "You know what? PJ Morton's character says, "You know, I'm working on something new. It's gonna be better next time." And then the bar owner's like, "Ain't gonna be no next time. Man, that's it. You done here. And PJ Morton's character begins to whine and complain. He's like, "No, you know, don't do me like this. And
bar owner's like, no, it's done. And so then he leaves, leaving PJ Morton's character sitting at the bar, nursing a drink, basically. And then the father comes back. And so you have the father and son sitting there. The father has not, still not disclosed who he is to the son. Son is just seeing the father as just another man who can commiserate with them, or at the very least, at the very least can hear him, can listen to him, or is willing to listen to him, because you in the same dry bar too. Anyway, so they're talking and the father starts buying up drinks. They get wasted, right? And how can I explain? But I'll just say it. So they get wasted and then they get up and they go out and the cabbie is waiting. Now, what I didn't tell you is that the father, after having that terrible dream, calls the cabbie, tells him to take him to the jazz club, and then tries to give him money to say, wait for me. But the cab driver doesn't take the money. He's like, you didn't pay me enough over, you know, calling me and stuff like that. As much money as you didn't give me over these times that you called me, I'll wait for here. I'll wait here as long as you need to. And obviously they closed the bar, right? They closed the bar down. That's how long they were in there. So the father and son were in there. So the father and son stumble out and the father knows that the cabbie is still going to be waiting there. And when they stumble out, he is waiting there. And so the father puts the son in the back of the cab and goes to the front passenger window of the cab, and gives the cab driver, the cabbie, a little index card or a little business card, and says, take up to this address. I keep yawning and I apologize. Anyway, so he, you know, the father says, take him to this address. And he's like, okay, bet. And so he pulls off and you get the sense that the father is going somewhere else. And so he does. So meanwhile, in the car, the son says to the cabbie, what do you know about that man? Cause like, he's drunk, but like, he's not that drunk that he's like, what's this all about? Cause again, he don't know that beautiful beard man is his father. So anyway, so he asked the question to the cabbie, what do you know about that man? And the cabbie, very kind of weirdly and with a wicked grin, says he made a bad deal. And I'm like, okay, what's this about? So the cabbie takes him to the address and it's a bunch of brick buildings and then there's this corridor, and the cabbie is like, this is where you get off. And so the young man gets out of the car and is like, but I don't know where I'm going. And the cabbie's like, you'll find your way. As if to say that the cabbie looked at the card that the father gave him and understood what was about to happen, like where he was going. And so PJ Morton's character gets out of the car and he's like, okay. And then he just walks down the corridor, the brick wall lined corridor. So he walks down it and he turns the corner because it bends to the left. He turns the corner and he finds himself in the exact same place where the father, beautiful beard man, found himself in the very beginning of the episode. And it's the same high priest doing the incantation with the same priestesses behind him chanting as well. And PJ Morton's character is like befuddled. He doesn't know what's happening here. And meanwhile, we cut to beautiful beard man, who's now crying in his home, looking at the picture of his son. And he's just distraught, sitting on the stairs, looking at a picture of his son. He's very distraught. Because he knows what's about to happen. He knows his son is about to die because of him. I'm sure he doesn't know, but he's very distraught. He knows. He knows that whatever's about to happen isn't good. And one thing that I'll come back to this thing that I forgot to share with you later, but it's very important. So anyway, so we've cut back to PJ Morton's character standing in front of these chanting voodoo high priest and priestesses, and we see the left side of the wall where Papa Legbo's likeness, his shadow likeness, is projected onto the wall. And he's like, it's time for you to pay. It's time for you to pay. And what I did not say before, but I will say now, is that PJ Morton's character at the bar, when he was being fired by the bar owner, said, don't do this to me. I got a son on the way. And so we flash back to this moment where Papa Legbo is telling him, it's time. Your time is up. And PJ's character says, I got a son on the way. Don't, you know, I can't. I got a son on the way. And then he's like, well, okay. Well, we might could do something about that. Talking about Papa Legbo. Instantly, our attention is turned back to the priest chanting and the priestess is chanting. And then we see the cabbie in the middle of the chanting priest and priestesses. And then we also see that the voice that we were hearing of Papa Legbo belongs to the cabbie. And now the cabbie's eyes begins to contort and twist. And then he's like, okay, well, you want to make a deal? The sins of the father are visited upon the son. And so you get the sense, in that moment, you get the sense that PJ Morton is about to, in an effort to save his life, push whatever was about to happen to him on his unborn son. And the cycle continues. And so in this moment, you don't know if what Beautiful Beard Man was doing in that moment in the very beginning was saving himself from something else, like something that his father had done for him, or put off on him or not. But it's like a full circle moment. Like you get that this is going to continue, that the son will now have to come to Papa Legbo and make a deal and push it off on his child, right? So anyway, it was an interesting concept. I told it poorly, so you should just watch it anyway. But yeah, it's a very interesting concept, a very interesting and, in my opinion, pleasing way to end the series. Because you started with something spiritual. You, in the middle of it, you talked about something that is in the sleep, and in the sleep terror is something that is expressed in many religions across the globe. And then you end it with something that is very specific to black to voodoo, which is Papa Legbo. I believe he is only present in voodoo. And I say he because the form that this entity entity chooses to manifest itself is in the form of a man. And anyway, you can Google it for more information. But anyway, I enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed the fact that the cabbie was the through line all the way in every single episode. So you get the sense that he's always been Papa Legbo. From Grace to the pillow shop, all the way now to Give Man. He is Give Man. He is Papa Legbo. And so yeah, overall, I thought that this series was cool. It was interesting. I was expecting there to be more, but I don't know, with COVID and all of that stuff, I don't know what they're going to do. But yeah, I did appreciate this. I look forward to more. And again, this isn't horror, but it's definitely scary. It's scary to me, and it's probably scary to a lot of people too, at least the concept of what they're talking about, right? The situations that's happening, that are being depicted in these shows. I think it's very interesting. Anyway, so that's it for this series, but it's not it for this month. Obviously I have more, I have some more scary things to talk about. But no, Insidious will not be one of them. By the way, the other day I saw it on AMC and I said, you are just rude. I would rather watch Halloween. You know what I'm saying? All the Halloween franchises, which, by the way, I do not love those either. That is super scary to me. The concept of it, not the execution of the movies per se, but the concept, Jiminy. And also they're real kind of preachy and shame people. But anyway, I think everybody's deduced that over the years. I'm not the first one to come to that conclusion. But anyway, and the Mike Myers, or am I confusing Mike Myers with, wait, am I confusing Mike Myers with Jason? No, because both of those movies, both of those franchises shamed teenagers for quote unquote being irresponsible and sex driven. And this is what your irresponsibility and your libido will get you. Basically, that's the moral of those that story, which is like super dumb and manipulative. But anyway, so yeah, there are other things that I'm watching. I may review again Monsterland, although I don't know. Maybe I won't, because the way that first one ended, maybe I won't. But I'll definitely bring some other things there, because I did find Mother. No, was it? No, not Mother. There's a scary movie that I told you about. Remember those twins that I was telling you about? Oh, shoot. I found the movie and then I lost it again. Let me hurry up and look. It's on Hulu. Shoot. And I started to watch it and then I was like, no, I don't want to go there, because remember I told you that the only reason why I was introduced to that creepy old film was because my friend every year does this Halloween-a-thon sort of thing in the entire month of October. And so the only reason why I watched it was because it was put in my face and I had no choice. But anyway, I'll remember it and maybe I'll talk about it some other time, but one of these episodes that are remaining in this month. But yeah, I definitely don't want to watch that again because it was a lot. But yeah, I'll come to you with something interesting. Yeah, so that's it. I've talked enough at this point. So I appreciate y'all for listening. I really appreciate y'all for your comments, for your rating without comments. Like, you know, you can leave me a comment and I will be happy to read it, especially if it's positive. I will not be reading negative comments. You can read that to yourself. But yeah, I will read your comments if you leave them, the positive ones. Anyway, but thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for rating. I really appreciate it. This is still very fun to me. It still feels like, right now, it still feels like the first time that I decided that I wanted to make an episode. And I don't know how long I'm going to keep doing this, but I'm pleased as punch to do it. I'm happy to make this a part of my life. I'm happy that you're listening. And yeah. So anyway, thank you. Whenever you're listening to this, if you're listening to this in the background because you're doing a project, if you are listening to this while you exercise, and if you, you know, just want to chill and you listening to this, I appreciate you. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I hope you continue to have a wonderful day. And if you're not feeling well, just know that, you know, trouble don't last always. Keep your head up. A lot of people care about you. I don't know you, but I wish you well. And I wish you nothing but good things. All right, enough corniness. All right, until next time, thank you. Thank you for listening.